Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the inaugural show, Coach Conversations. Coach Conversations is sponsored by the Arizona chapter, the Phoenix chapter of the International Coach Federation. The International Coach Federation has over 20,000 members in 108 countries, and we're calling in today from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm your host today, Catherine Halpin. I'm very pleased to be with all of you. We look forward to getting some rich dialogue going with each one of you and our guest, Deborah Exner. Deb is the most immediate past president of our local chapter here in Phoenix of the ICF, and she's going to be our guest today. Deb is a coach and a consultant and a trainer and a musician, and so we're going to learn a lot about Deb this afternoon, and we're going to have lots of opportunities for interaction so that you can ask Deb questions and you can give us feedback and we can enter into some rich dialogue. So we look forward to you all joining us shortly. So Deb, thank you so much for being on our first inaugural Blog Talk Radio show.
Hi, Catherine. It's great to be on, and I love inaugurations and starts of new possibilities.
Yes. Well, I would imagine that as we talk to you this afternoon, we're going to find that you've been part of many, many firsts in your life. I just based on what I already know about you. But let's start at the beginning. Let's not talk about coaching. I always like to know where people grew up. I think that tells us so much about a person if we know what part of the world they grew up in and a little bit about their family of origin. So tell us, did you grow up here in the United States?
I did. I grew up in New York in Queens.
Queens, New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
City girl.
A city girl, yes. I would imagine Queens is very, very urban. Not Manhattan, but very much like Manhattan, right?
Yeah, it's pretty similar and close enough to Manhattan that you get to do lots of things in Manhattan.
Yes. Now tell us about your parents and did you have any siblings, that sort of thing?
Well, I was raised primarily by my dad and my stepmom, and they were both professional musicians. And I have a half-sister, and we didn't get to live together a whole lot of time. We did in our very early years, but not much later. And then my biological mom was from Texas.
Oh.
So I had lots of different, my stepmom was from Nebraska, and my dad was from New England, so I had all kinds of language influences accents and things.
Yes. And I imagine that influenced you in many ways, not just the language and the cultures, but that whole diversity of perspective thing. Because Nebraska and Texas and New England are quite different.
Yes, they are.
Now tell us, Deb, we're very interested to know about your background before you became a coach. So tell us very specifically what your career has been like prior to coaching.
Okay. I started off floundering a wee bit. I wanted to be an actress.
I can't believe that.
Oh, yes, it's absolutely true. I wanted to be an actress, or at least that's what I thought I wanted, but I was terrified of auditions. So that's a little bit of an issue.
Right. A minor
hard to do one without the other. Yeah.
Right. So in your floundering, I imagine you did what many wannabe actresses did. You waited tables and did odd jobs. Is that correct?
Wait tables, and then I switched in midstream and decided that music had been a part of my life for my whole life, mm-hmm. and that what I wanted to do was to be a musician. And I asked my dad if he thought it was possible, because I wanted actually to be a musician on an instrument I hadn't started playing yet.
Wow. And you were an adult already.
I was. I was pretty young adult. But, yes, I was an adult. And he said, you never know unless you go for it.
That's right. And so what was the instrument?
The bass.
The bass?
I had grown up around the bass. Yeah, it's a big one. My dad played the bass and the tuba, and and my mom, my stepmom, was a violinist. But I'd grown up around the bass and always liked the sound of the bass. But other than a brief fling in high school where I tried it for a couple of months, I hadn't really ever played it. Though I had studied piano, so I had a lot of musical background, but not on the bass.
Yeah.
So I started studying with a vengeance and studying very very hard, taking lots of lessons and joining lots of orchestras to get practice and performance skills.
And so to this day, you're a concert musician, isn't that correct?
Well, I play in an orchestra, yeah. So to this day, I play bass in an orchestra, though it's very much of a part-time career or avocation rather than being my full-time work. But I think it was pivotal because I met my husband was a cellist. He was a chemist who played cello and wanted to be a full-time cellist. So he decided to become a computer consultant to make time for music. And at the time I met him, I was a single mom with a 5-year-old son working really hard to learn the bass. And I said, oh, I could do that too.
So what did you do? Do you mean you learned computer programming and...
Not programming, but more the end-user side of it. At the time, PCs were just coming into the market, and I had already been tapped to learn those things and teach it to other people. I was working for New York University in personnel and doing music. You know, I was working part-time for the university and doing music the rest of the time.
And
so I just decided to shift and be one of the people that taught people how to use the computers as my work. And it worked out very well. I did that for about 20 years.
Wow.
Enjoyed it a lot.
Just as I imagined at the beginning of this call, that I knew that you'd be sharing with us lots of different inaugural experiences. You were the first. So you got into computers early on and learned to learn them and then learned them well enough to train other people. That's so exciting. Now, what were the pivotal experiences that led you to coaching as a profession?
Well, coaching came when I sort of had a wake-up call. My stepmom that raised me was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, which is cancer of the bone marrow. And at the time, I had a business partner, and we were teaching and traveling a lot. And as a result of the teaching that we were doing, we had a great time working together. But I really didn't want to be away so much because the illness at the time made it look like my mom was going to have a much shortened lifespan.
Oh.
And I wanted to spend as much time with her as I could.
Mm-hmm. Of course. So you were looking for something to do that would give you more flexibility or just looking to take a break completely?
Yeah, actually I was looking to, I was looking partly to get more balance in my life and also looking to see if there was some other work I wanted to do that in my mind had more of a lasting impact than the work I was doing. I enjoyed what I was doing, but at the end of the day, software's shelf life is pretty small.
Yes.
So you just get people all trained and going with their software, and then it'll be on to something else. So
right. And then with being faced with losing your mother, then I could certainly see how you would be confronted by that. You know, maybe want to make a difference being on the planet.
Right.
Yeah.
So I hired a coach. Actually, I knew a coach, and I had in the back of my mind that I would hire her someday when I got, made some time for it.
Yes, all of us
I'd still
have
be
that
waiting.
Right. I tell people it never gets to the top of someone's to-do list to call an executive coach. So you were like at a business event or something and you won a coupon, or tell us about that.
She put a month of coaching services up on a silent auction for an organization that we both belong to. So I bid on it and won.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Now, was this here in Phoenix?
No, it was in Delaware where I was living at the time.
Okay, in Delaware. So you got your month of free coaching.
And then I kept on going for about a year.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't too far into that process where I realized I got a ton of value from it and that I had a lot of skills that would make me a good coach, although I also recognized some things I'd need to learn to do differently so I wouldn't get kind of wrapped up in things in a non-productive way. So we went to lunch to talk about, you know, what does it take to be a coach? You know, how do you learn to do this?
Right. Right. So what year was this?
I think it was in 1999 or 2000, because it was 2001 when I went to coaching school.
Uh-huh. And which coach training program did you participate in?
The Coaches Training Institute, which is in San Rafael, California.
Yes, I know many, 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 many people that have been through that extraordinary program, CTI. Now, how did you find CTI?
The coach that I was working with had gone there. So I didn't even ask any other questions. I just said, okay, fine.
Right, right. That's my exact experience. I found Thomas Leonard, who I say is the founder of this profession as we know it today. I found him through a magazine article on career coaching. And I called him, and at that time, 1995, there were two schools. There was CTI, Coaches Training Institute in Northern California, and it was Coach U, and he was calling it Coach University. That was before the regulators got a hold of him and made him give up the university title. So he didn't bother to tell me about CTI, and I didn't know enough to ask if there was any place else I could get my coach training. So I signed up on the spot for Coach U. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, now,
go ahead. I think one thing that was cool, that made it an easy decision for me was that CTI at the time had, I think still does, they had this 5-weekend program and then a certification program, but you could just sign up for 1 weekend and have sort of a taste of coaching. I mean, that wouldn't make you enough to be a coach, but you'd have some coaching skills.
Yeah.
And I thought that absolutely, positively, without questions, having some coaching skills would be a benefit to me, whatever I chose to do, and that would be a good way to test the waters.
Right. Wasn't that smart of them? Well, I know CTI, or Coaches Training Institute, was a leader in many, 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 many ways with Coach U in establishing the International Coach Federation and in establishing the credentialing program for coaches through the ICF and, you know, getting the coach training school certified. So CTI, I know, is a premier school, and I'm not a bit surprised. Knowing what I know about you, Deb, and knowing what I know about them, I can see that that was just a perfect fit. Now, tell us about your philosophy of coaching. Would you say you have a philosophy of coaching?
I think I do. I mean, I'm not sure what you mean by that for yourself, but I can tell you how I think. I mean, I like to work from an assets-based perspective, from a positive point of view, helping people to see, because that's really a lot of what I got out of coaching was that my coach helped me to see my strengths, and getting, you know, I mean, I'd been with myself for a long time, so you'd think maybe I would have known them already, but I didn't really. I think we have a tendency to think that the things that we do well, which are often the things that come fairly easily to us, are no big deal and that everybody can do them.
Right. It's human nature to think that way.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was helpful to me to realize that, no, those things that I could do really well were not everyone's province, and just like there are things that I don't do so well.
Right.
And so it was very helpful for me to be able to know that more consciously, be more aware of my strengths.
To have, exactly, to have more awareness. And then to be able to build on those things.
Yeah.
To build on those strengths, that you had this new awareness about your strengths. That's great. That is so great.
Yeah. And well, I think it also, I was just going to say, it also made me notice, well, made me realize how often our strengths are also our weaknesses.
Yes, 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 yes. Say more about that, Deb.
So for example, for me, a strength was a high degree of responsibility. So I would take responsibility for things. And,
yes.
And realizing that sometimes the flip side of that is that other people don't get much chance to really take responsibility for things, or that I can run myself into the ground by taking more than my fair share, and really learning that sometimes over-responsibility can get in the way of collaboration.
Yes, yes. Now, I'm sure that none of our callers, that are our listeners, are people that can relate to that. No one else can relate to that. But I sort of have some kind of inkling of what you're talking about. Now, were you, you weren't the oldest child because you were almost raised as an only child.
Right.
I always think that over-responsibility thing comes from being the oldest child. But it doesn't matter where it comes from, and that's the beauty of coaching. We don't need to know where it comes from. We just need to know what's going to take for you to modulate that and manage that out of this awareness that you have.
I think a pivotal question that my coach asked me was, I wish I could remember the exact words, but something along the lines of, she was trying to encourage me to loosen up a little on how much responsibility I would take. And she asked me if I was afraid that I would somehow, you know, slide down into this pit of irresponsibility.
Yes. Yeah.
And how likely I thought that was to happen, and I had to laugh and say, oh, not very.
Right. That's so funny. Yes, it's not very likely that you're going to all of a sudden become a slacker. But you can look for opportunities to lighten up and like you said, invite other people to collaborate with you and share responsibility.
Right.
And one of the things that I've learned from the coaching process is that when we do that, the rewards, the outcomes are so much richer and so much deeper and so much more valuable than anything we could have created ourselves by rolling up our sleeves. We all know how to roll up our sleeves, but the outcome is going to be limited because we're going to be the only person involved.
Yep.
Yeah. So tell us about some of your biggest coaching successes. That was certainly a coaching success for you as the coachee, the person being coached. What about as a coach? I know part of our code of ethics requires us that we keep everything confidential, but could you just either speak in general terms or talk about somebody?
Sure.
I would like to refer to people named Bob. I love that name, Bob.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think some of the focus is I didn't realize how fortunate I was in many ways, growing up with my parents, doing work that they loved, and, you know, work that had kind of chosen them from an early age, that I grew up with messages that work was supposed to be pleasurable and meaningful, and that you also had to make sure you could pay your bills. So that was another piece of it. So it was, you know, you want to be an actress? Great, go do it and learn to type.
Right. Right.
And so I didn't realize that was a fairly unusual message to get from your parents, or at least in many cases. A lot of the early clients I got were people who were in careers that they really did not like.
Right.
Because, you know, they thought they or their parents or their guidance counselors or whoever thought they were good, solid places to be, and emphasized income over, you know, satisfaction and joy in your work, and and even sometimes even being really good at the work.
Yeah.
So I guess my perspective or the perspective I could bring or the questions that I might ask about that were illuminating to many of the people that I had even just conversations with. And so a lot of my early coaching was around that and also around the idea of making each day count. I think in my mom's, you know, experience with myeloma, I ended up becoming a support group leader for people with multiple myeloma, and I did that for about 7 years.
Wow.
I mean, that was as a volunteer. And but the whole experience made me recognize so much more clearly than we sometimes do that, you know, life can be a lot shorter than we think. So
that's,
are we doing
right,
things that really matter?
That's right. I love that. Well, it sounds like, Deb, that your parents had a degree of maturity that many parents have not enjoyed, and of course their children haven't enjoyed, as a result. So it seems like they had a pretty solid foundation.
Well, it's an interesting way to look at it because a lot of people look at the idea of going off and being a musician and not making tons and tons of money, perhaps, is a degree of immaturity. So I like your perspective.
I love that. I think you've got a foundational piece that many of us did not get in our early lives, and so I'm just acknowledging your parents now for being able to give you that ability to know at an early age when confronted with your mother's illness, you knew that you wanted to focus on what was most important in life.
Yeah.
What? Tell us about your coach. Oh, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, so, you know, I was going to say that so often I have been coaching clients like Bob who had a job that was, successful and paid well but wasn't really a great fit. I mean, he could do it very well, but he wasn't really happy in that particular company culture.
Right.
And he ended up finding a position through the same company, but in a wildly adventurous place. And I won't say where because it'll be too descriptive, tie back.
But it was very exciting.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah.
A whole adventure and just really enlivened the work that he was doing without really having all that much of an impact on income and stability.
Wow, isn't that great? And those are the kind of successes that you see as a coach every day, I imagine.
Yeah, and a big piece of what I like to work with people on now is bringing principles of positive psychology and performance psychology into their lives, and how can we operate from a positive possibility kind of place.
Yes, I totally support that. I tell people I'm in the quantum leap business. I was talking to a new client today and about launching a coaching program next week, and he said, now how should I prepare for the call? And I said, bring your snarliest situations with your people and your initiatives, and we'll dissect those, because snarlier than the greater the quantum leap result.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I can totally see that you could help facilitate those experiences for your clients. Now, tell us about your ideal client today. What does that person look like? Is it gender, profession, age, anything, attitude, mindset, anything at all?
I think it really has to do with someone that's ready to make a change and that's willing to spend some time and energy and effort on doing so. And, I mean, the thing that's so great about coaching, I think, is that it doesn't always require a ton of time. It just requires some introspection and some opportunity and space, really making some space to look at things from a higher level view and to become more aware. And but it does require the willingness to do that, the willingness to look at things from different perspectives and to really be honest with yourself about what it is that you want and what's going to make life satisfying for you when you look back on it and say, oh, yeah, I'm really glad I spent my time that way.
Right. So anybody who's up for some big changes and is willing to invest in themselves would be an ideal client for you.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah, someone that really wants to develop some practices that will help them to stay focused and, you know, in action in ways that are productive for them.
Yes, instead of that hamster wheel productivity approach that we so often see out there in the world where people are just on a hamster cage. Now, the purpose of our call today is really to educate the community about coaching and to promote the International Coach Federation. But it doesn't hurt to just talk a little bit more, Deb, about how people might reach you, because I know people will be interested just from hearing your story and hearing your own experiences as the person being coached and as the coach. So would you like to share with us your website or your...
Oh, sure. It is exnerassociates.com is my website. And I also have a collaboration with another coach on the topic of collaboration. So we have a blog We have a blog at collaborationpaysoff.com.
I love that.
And we write there about, you know, about our experiences with collaboration and bringing tips and ideas to people about how they can collaborate better.
Great. So people can look for you either at that blog or that website.
Yes.
Great. Now, this, because we're here to promote the International Coach Federation, tell us about your experience with the ICF. How did you find the ICF, and how did you become a member?
Okay. So when I went through coach training, I was living in Delaware, and CTI did a really great job of letting all of us know about the ICF and that there were chapters in our, you know, local areas. And the closest chapter to me at that point was in Philadelphia. And so we went to Philadelphia for chapter meetings, but there was a group of about 20 of us that decided to form a chapter in Delaware.
Wow.
And we got fairly far along. We got our charter and everything, but it didn't fly.
Uh-huh.
And I know you know about how that can happen sometimes.
Yeah. Of course. Yes, I was the founder at the request of Thomas Leonard himself, Jeff Rehm, and I founded in 1996 what was called the Arizona chapter of the Internet. Well, it wasn't even the International Coach Federation at that time, but we knew we were trying to form some kind of professional association, and we formed that, and we got together mostly for social reasons. We would have a meal together monthly or quarterly, and there were a group of about 10 or 12 of us even then, but that would cover the whole state, of course. And then that dissipated within a year, and then we went through four or five other iterations of chapters, and that's why I'm so proud of the Phoenix chapter today, mm-hmm. because I know how much struggle we all went through to really find the right level of organization and professionalism. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
that happened to us in Delaware, and yes. After limping along for a long time, we decided to fold the idea of the Delaware chapter at that time and started arranging carpools to the Philadelphia meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So that was our alternative.
Yeah.
And that worked out pretty well because Philadelphia was not that far away, and the chapter there was very strong, so it was
yeah.
to go.
Well, it takes a lot to have a strong chapter, and I know you've been a big part of the Phoenix chapter being so strong. You served on the board for many years and the immediate past president. Besides the local chapter benefits, what are the other benefits that you see as from being a member of the ICF?
Well, I think one of the main ideas of the ICF is to have coaches who are trained and who abide by a code of ethics. So there is a code of ethics that we all, you know, each time we renew our membership, we reread that code of ethics and we agree to it again. And there is training available on the different aspects of that code of ethics. In addition to the ethics, there are also core competencies that are laid out for coaches to kind of measure themselves against and improve and work toward. The annual conferences provide a lot of great learning, and if you can't attend, you can get recordings and listen to the recordings afterwards. A key thing for me were the virtual community calls, which are free to members, and these are places I got to know about a lot of the people who were part of the founding of the coaching as a profession and get to know their perspectives and hear about their books, and then I go off and read their books and get to know more and more. And those virtual community calls are, I believe they're still twice a month, and they are recorded, and so you can listen to them after the fact or listen to them live and participate in the questions and things. Mm-hmm. So all of those things are very valuable.
Oh, yes. Our professional association is, I think, extraordinary, given that we're a new profession, but to have over 20,000 members. Well, if you've just joined us, you're listening to Coach Conversations. I'm Catherine Halpin, and our guest today is Deb Exner. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to take calls from listeners. So listen for the information about how you might reach us and engage in this rich dialogue with Deb Exner.
And next, we are going to have time for some question and answers. If you are listening to this show live, please call in at 424-243-9638. I repeat, 424-243-9638. And you will have time to ask questions to Catherine or Debbie. Thank you so much for taking your time to listen to Coach Conversations, the blog talk radio program sponsored by the International Coach Federation Phoenix Chapter. Once again, the number to call in is 424-243-9638. And now I'm going to go to our first question, and I think Debbie and Catherine are on the air again.
Yes, we're with you.
We're here.
And the first question that came in the format of a comment, that is another way besides the number that I'm going to repeat, 424-243-9638, in the web page of the program, that is blogtalkradio.com/ECF Phoenix, you also have a box for comments where you can also put your questions in. And one question there is for Debbie, how do you walk your talk?
Excellent question, because I believe that the key to coaching is for the coaches to walk their talk. So thank you, Anna, for that great question that's been submitted by one of our listeners. So, Deb, can you take a minute and tell us about what you do to walk your talk?
Sure. And I guess I want to say that we're all works in progress. And so we become aware of things that need attention, we give them our attention, and then we get better and better at doing that as we go along. So most of these things are lifelong studies and lifelong areas of development, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And a number of ways that I walk my talk is one by having a coach. I may not always, every single year or month have a coach, but I frequently have a coach of my own. And I find that extremely helpful, and I get different perspectives from different coaches and different kinds of help. So that's very valuable. The other thing that I do a lot is to create mastermind groups with people in my profession or one of my professions. So I currently have a coaching mastermind group. We are four coaches, and we get together on a monthly basis to kind of support each other both in our personal and our professional goals and bounce ideas around and hold each other accountable, and all of that really helps me. And then I use a product that I also use with clients. It's called Empower 10, and it's something that just takes 10 minutes a day but really helps me to focus on what's most important and to do it from a real positive place. So it has several things that you do that get you into a real positive mindset and then says, okay, now look at these goals and what have you accomplished so far on them and what's next?
Mm-hmm.
And that really helps me.
So say more about the Empower 10 program. Is that something you developed yourself or is that from CTI?
No, neither. It's actually was developed by two women who, Nancy Donahue and Michelle Chung, and I found out about it through a coach that's in our chapter, Paula Shoup. And actually, I found out about it from one of Paula's clients who was in an audience at a meeting, a different professional association meeting, and she stood up and said, if Paula calls you and asks you about Empower 10, listen to her because it changed my life. And I said, oh, I need to know about that. What is it, Paula?
That's called synchronicity.
Paula told me about it, and the first thing I wanted to do was to be a customer of it, really, to try it out on myself to see if it had that kind of change my life characteristic for me, too. And it did. So I then got certified in being able to offer it to my clients.
That's great. So it only requires 10 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a little set of six habits based on positive psychology and peak performance psychology principles. And it takes 10 minutes a day to do, and it just helps to keep you focused and in action on the things that really matter the most.
That's great. I use a planner pad for a similar reason, but I think I need to look at the Empower 10. I think that sounds really great. And I've heard other people, other clients of Paula's share about it, so I think this is a message that's coming to me repeatedly. And I need to listen up. So what other ways have you found that are useful to help you walk your talk as a coach? Anything else that we should know about of your secrets to your success?
Oh, yeah, I think a lifelong challenge for me is to try and keep my life in balance. And I would say I do have my life very much in balance. It just might be a little bit too full still.
Yes. Yes, we can all relate to that.
The distribution is nice and varied. It's, if I could cut back, dial back a little bit on each thing, that would be a good thing.
Yes.
So I work hard on, you know, being more mindful of the things that I agree to do or consider doing. And I've learned to refine my questions. And this has been largely through the help of coaches I've hired and coach friends. You know, what are the filtering questions that I need to ask myself before I decide to do or not to do something?
Yeah.
And for me, you know, for me, they can't be, do I like it? Because I like so many things.
Yeah.
They can't be, will I learn from it? Because that's a big sink for me. I love learning. So, you know, if I just signed up for everything I would learn from, that would still be too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to really contrast it to what will I not be able to do if I say yes to this? And is that a good trade-off?
Yes. Well, so in addition to that question, would you be willing to share some of your other filter questions that you ask yourself?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I do start with that. Would I like to do this, and would I learn from it? Is the outcome of it something that I want to be involved in? You know, is it worthy? Does it have a worthy purpose? And then I'm really focusing my professional efforts around this idea of helping people to connect, communicate, and collaborate. So as a speaker and trainer and coach, I'm looking to use that as a filter for the things that I decide to pursue. And so that becomes one of my filtering questions. Is it related to that or not? if you like doing lots of different things and, you know, love collaborating with people, there gets to be a place where there are more opportunities than you have time to take advantage of.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, that's why I was so excited to hear about your filtering questions, because I say the goal for all of us as coaches is to coach ourselves out of a job, because each client learns to have so much mindfulness, so much awareness, so many good practices that they can literally put themselves through those kinds of questions and coach themselves to a very satisfactory and rewarding solution.
I agree.
Great. Well, Anna, do we have any other callers?
No, online, but there is another question to Debbie. What advice you will give people out there who are thinking about being coached but keep delaying because they say that it's too expensive or they don't know how to find the right coach? Do you have advice around that?
Great question.
Sure. Yeah, that is a good question. A couple of things. I mean, one is to experience a particular coach. And a lot of coaches will have a conversation with you or will actually do a little bit of coaching with you so that you get to see if you're a good fit with that particular coach. And then the other thing is just to consider this in terms of an investment in your success and happiness and satisfaction, and look at the things that you are willing to invest in your life, and just take a look at them. Are you investing in some things that don't have as much payoff as coaching would? Is there a better way, you know, to spend your time and invest?
Yes. Very good. Very good. The question I would say that corresponds with what you just shared, Deb, is how big do you want to play? I ask people that question all the time, and that fits with the investment. How big do you want to play, and how much of an investment are you willing to make in yourself and in your career and in the quality of your life?
Right.
Would you say, Deb? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think there's a place to look at what it is that you want or say you want and what it is that you've got and say, yeah. Am I moving in the direction I want to go? Coaching is not the only way to make big changes in your life.
Right.
And there may be ways that you can do this on your own, but the question really is to look at, you know, come up with a plan and then set a time, maybe put a mark in your calendar for a certain date and say, at that point, I'm going to reevaluate and see if I managed to accomplish the things I want. And if I haven't, then maybe it's time to try a different approach.
Yeah.
And coaching might be that approach.
Yes, yes, yes. And don't you think, like your experience, most people should start by hiring their own coach? You said that, but I'd like for you to say anything else about that, you know, because the power of being a coach is being coachable, first and foremost. You have to be coachable yourself, and so people will find out that before they enroll in a training program if they just simply hire their own coach.
Yeah. And I thought the question Anna was asking was going to lead toward what would I say to people who wanted to become a coach, but I didn't think that she said that in the end. But if that was, you know, if that was a piece of the question, then, yeah, I definitely think if you're thinking that you might like to be a coach, the first step is to experience coaching and be coached by someone so that you get a real firsthand sense of, you know, just like for me, when I looked at the Empower 10 program and thought, this might be really great for my clients, but let me test it out on myself first and see,
right.
Does it help me to get where I want to go? And if it does, then, okay, now I'm interested in knowing more about it.
Right. Well, any other online questions, Anna, or comments from the audience that we should know about?
Not at this moment. I would like to just leave a message to our audience out there, because there are people that are going to be listening to this show afterwards in their computer or iPod, that they always can go to the webpage of the Phoenix chapter of the ECF, and the address is www.ecfphoenix.com, and you also can follow the chapter on Facebook. So if you search ECF Phoenix in your Facebook, you will get to the chapter there too.
Excellent. Thank you, Anna, for that. Because, again, the purpose of this call, Coach Conversations, our new blog talk radio show, is to really educate the public about coaching and that there is a professional association of coaches and that we do have a code of ethics. We love the profession of coaching and we want to promote it. And we thought that this would be one way to get the word out that it's a real profession. It's not just people that used to be something else and decided to add coach to their title and name, that there is a real profession. And we're an active member of that profession, active members of that profession based here in Phoenix, in the Phoenix chapter of the International Coach Federation. And on that note, Deb, I forgot to ask you, tell us about your level of certification. You probably got certified from CTI, and have you gotten certified from the ICF? Tell us about that whole process.
Yeah. Well, I went to CTI, the Coaches Training Institute, and I went through the 5 weekends of training that was in person. They were about, you know, a month apart with some things to do in between. And then I went on to their certification program, which was a 6-month program, virtual program by phone. And we had a variety of things to do. There were lots of lectures to listen to, things to read, homework assignments to do. We had our own goals that we had to set and reach during this time period. We met together in triads, groups of 3 people on the phone to work through some things, and then we had calls with the whole group of about 20 people that were going through certification together. Those alternated weeks, the whole group and then the triads. And then we also had supervisory calls. So with the permission of a client, we would record a coaching session and then play that for the supervisor and say what we thought worked and didn't work in that particular call, and then listen to what the supervisor had to tell us. I remember one time I had this call, and I played it for the supervisor, and he said, you know, you started out really great there, but it seems to me like you kind of missed the whole show.
Oh, how heartbreaking.
I know. This was a client, and I had clients at the time. This was a client that knew that I was in training, and I just called her up, and I said, hey, can we have a do-over? And she said, sure.
Oh.
So we had another call, and I, we sort of started in the same way, and then I just kind of got out of the way, really, and let it evolve, and it was, the difference between the two calls was like night and day. It was a great learning experience for me.
Wasn't that great?
That was cool.
So your certification was very rigorous. The CTI certification is obviously very rigorous if you have to do do-overs.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think I had to do a do-over. I chose to
right.
do a do-over.
Right,
but it was just too rich to not have
right.
a chance to do. But,
And
that, so CTI's program, if you go, there are other schools that have that level of program, and if you go through that, and then at the end there was a written exam and an oral exam where I had to coach two different people in front of supervisors or examiners to be judged, a competent coach or not. And so when you've gone through that level of certification from your school, then the ICF certification is simpler and becomes really just a matter of documenting, of having coaching hours and documenting them and submitting the paperwork.
Yeah.
There's another way to go through ICF certification is where you get your training maybe more piecemeal from a variety of different sources, and then there's more of the gathering up of the data and proving the training in these different places that it all adds up to what they want, and getting a hiring a coach who can be a supervisor, sort of a supervisor for you.
Yeah. And
so that's a little more labor intensive, but in any case, in the end, you can get to an ICF certification. So I actually jumped right to the PCC level of certification.
Wow.
Because the ACC didn't, it was like the ACC got created while I was in coaching school, so
yeah.
I was already geared up toward working for my PCC. So I just waited until I had sufficient hours to do that.
Excellent.
And
I would imagine
yeah.
that you're getting fairly close to having that highest level certification from the ICF, which is the master certified coach.
Yeah. Well, I have a spreadsheet where I log my hours, and it tells me at this rate you have this much more time to go before you'll get there. And
yes.
Then,
but I so appreciate that you have that spreadsheet and that you value that highest level of certification.
I do. And the other thing I like about coaching in general, there's a couple of things. One is that it requires really that you keep learning and growing.
Yeah.
And then it requires that you continually work on yourself. And I like being in a profession that requires that of me.
Right. Because we have to, like we've been talking about, we have to walk our talk. We can't be, relying on poor coping skills to get through the day and then trying to coach people to have extraordinary lives. And so we all have to do, I tell people, it's part of my job description to go on those two-week vacations twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have to walk our talk. And we have to, the continuous improvement. I've always said I had a core value around continuous improvement. And I'm always saying, what's the life lesson for Catherine? What's the life lesson for Catherine? And that does serve us well as coaches.
Yeah. And part of the ICF certification is that you get continuing education credits between certification renewals, and there are a number of ways to get them. And then that's kind of fun. Like I look at it, how shall I earn my credits this year? this time,
yes.
And I look
right.
for the things that are really interesting to me.
Yes. Well, this would be a good time to talk about the International Coach Federation's conference. It's coming up in Las Vegas in late September of 2011. And you could find out more at www.coachfederation.org. One word, coachfederation.org. And I've been to most of those conferences since the very first one in 1996 in Houston, Texas. And I always tell people I can't afford not to go to the annual conference because my practice, my coaching business goes to the next level. I attract a higher level clients who pay more money and value the coaching even more every time because I just learn and grow just from that 3-day experience. So it's a wonderful opportunity, especially for those of us who are in Phoenix and are just 5 hours away from Las Vegas. So www.coachfederation.org. And this would be a great time, unless, Anna, you've got other comments from our listeners that we need to know about. Anything
no,
at all?
There are, I see listens or online, but there is no more questions now.
Great. Well, thank you for being our technical consultant. It's only in a field like coaching where we would have a PhD, Anna's our PhD level coach who's also our technical consultant for this show, and we're very, very grateful, Anna, for all that you've done to get us to this point. A couple of things before we sign off. I want to take a minute to really reflect again on the power of the Phoenix chapter of the International Coach Federation. I shared the story of how we were founded over and over and over. But I think in about 2005, this current iteration came together thanks to four people that were very important to the local coaching community, Catherine Ross, Linda Miller, Pete Walsh, and Alan Milham. Alan moved here from the Bay Area, also a graduate of CTI, and he said it's just a sin that in the fifth largest city in the country we don't have an ICF chapter. So he organized Kat and Linda and Pete, and they founded this chapter and did quite a bit of paperwork with the ICF to be a real chapter and laid a foundation with a board of directors and an entity that lives on today thanks to people like Deb. So I just wanted to do that little shout-out for those four founders of our Phoenix ICF chapter. I'd like to invite you all to join us on Friday, May the 27th at 2 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time, 2 to 3. We'll be back here together for Coach Conversations with Maria Bush. Maria is an associate certified coach in ACC and is the current president of the local chapter here in Phoenix of the International Coach Federation. So thank you to all of our listeners for dialing in or logging in to hear this extraordinary dialogue with the fabulous Deb Exner. And Deb, thank you so much for being willing to be our inaugural guest and to share your story and to share all of your wealth of experiences for our benefit today. I'm so grateful.
Well, thank you, Catherine. Thank you for spearheading this this event for us. I appreciate it.
It's great fun. Well, it all came from you. I have to give the shout-out right back to you because you called me in March and said, how do you want to contribute to the chapter? And I said, well, you don't want me on the board. My best
it's
role is...
It's important to know our talents, right?
That's exactly right. Otherwise, I could get the volume turned up way too high, way too fast. So please join us on May 27th, 2 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time with Maria Bush for another rich dialogue and coach conversations on Blog Talk Radio.
Can I leave our listeners with one of my favorite quotes?
Yes, please.
This is by a playwright named Brendan Francis, and he said, if you have a talent, use it in every which way possible. Don't hoard it. Don't dole it out like a miser. Spend it lavishly like a millionaire intent on going broke.
I love that, a millionaire intent on going broke. So thank you for sharing your vast talents and gifts with us today, Deb. We're very, very grateful.
Thank you, Anna.
Yes, thank you, Anna, for getting us all here today.
All right, till next time.
Till next time, Coach Conversations.